Welcome to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. Your host, Jen Narciso, interviews amazing guests each week to help you become educated, be inspired by other money stories, and stay motivated on your own wealth-building journey. No matter where you are financially, whether you're in debt or financially free, this podcast is for you. Now sit back and enjoy.
Welcome back to the Investor Mama Podcast, Money Conversations with a Mom's Touch. I'm your host, Jen Narciso. And on today's episode, I have the pleasure of bringing on Maggie Tucker from Friends on Fire. If you haven't checked out her podcast, you need to. It's phenomenal. She's so great. And we're going to talk about minimalism and mommying. I know many of you have reached out and have mentioned that you wanted to hear how other moms spend their money. And so Maggie is going to share her mindset, her mentality around spending or lack of spending. And I'm very excited to hear from her and hear how she does it all. But before we dive into today's episode, I just wanted to remind you that if you'd like to support the Investor Mama podcast, you should definitely go check out investormama.com/make money. There's some great resources on there for you and some great courses, and anything you purchase helps support the show, which is really cool. And it's a win-win because anything that I promote on the site is something that I personally use or know people who've used and had success with. So that's the only thing I would ever recommend for you. But if you're maybe looking for a career shift, you could check out the Salesforce Challenge. It's a free 5-day challenge, and you could really learn how to pivot into a new career, allowing you more time freedom, more flexibility, but still making a great income. But now let's jump into today's episode. So without further ado, Maggie, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Thank you so much. I'm doing very good. How about you?
I'm good, thanks.
You know, I always have to pause when I say that because I just out of habit, everyone's like, oh, I'm doing good. And I have to think, like, I actually am doing good today. So
that's very, you know, I don't think I've ever heard anyone be thoughtful about it. It's usually the knee-jerk response.
Yeah. I was at a school event yesterday or a couple of days ago, and I saw a dad I hadn't seen in a while, and I asked him how he was doing. And he was like, he's kind of sarcastic. And he was like, not very well, and looked at me very seriously. And I was like, Are you joking? I was like, if you're joking, that was really funny because everybody always says the same thing. And I was like, and then if you're not, what's wrong? And he was funny. He was like, no, I'm just kidding. Like, but I love that. I was like a different answer that kind of threw me off for a second.
I remember taking some course. It was like a networking thing. And then it was always like when someone asks you how you're doing, never say good. Like always come up with something creative because then they'll remember you later on.
Yeah, that's cool. Anything other than just good.
Yeah. Well, late night recordings, it's after 8:30 already. So as moms, you know how it is, finding time to do anything and being exhausted. And then, but Maggie, let's chat. Tell me a little bit about your money story.
Yeah. So my money story, I grew up in a pretty, I'd say, average middle-class family. I learned some pretty strong work ethic from both of my parents. And also a lot of like independence, like we had to have jobs. We had to, you know, they helped us buy a, you know, used, not super nice car, but helped us buy a car. But like we had to pay for the insurance. We had jobs as soon as we were old enough to work. And so we really learned, myself and my brother really learned early on, like we were handed all the basic things we needed in life, but we were not handed a lot of additional luxuries that had to be with money we earned ourselves. So I think I really do appreciate my parents at a young age instilling that in me, because I'm not sure if they were doing it purposely or because they didn't have massive amounts to give to us. I think it was maybe a little bit of both, but it really did create the way I am about my work ethic and just my, I guess, frugality, for summarizing it in one word, or my just, you know, very value-based intentional spending. And then I actually pretty early on started making, even my first job out of college, kind of through a twist of some career events, went into something where I made like double what I thought I was going to be making out of college. And I had a pretty fast career trajectory, such a hard word to say. I had a pretty fast career trajectory in terms of levels and money. And so was very thankful. And I mean, I definitely was like working really hard. I mean, before I had kids, especially, I was working too hard, quite honestly. I put work before many other things in my life. But as a result of the success I had from a career standpoint, I was able to mix that with my own pretty kind of responsible, frugal ways of, I certainly splurged at times and did a lot and enjoyed my life, but I also wasn't necessarily, definitely wasn't spending as much as many people around me that had made similar amounts or even less amounts. And so I just, you know, I've always, from the very beginning, I guess, money story-wise, had this mix of really strong work ethic mixed with saving my money and being very thoughtful about what I will and won't spend it on. And I mean, as a result, I was able, a highlight of my money story is I was able to early retire at 41 about 6 months ago with my husband.
Which is amazing. And you have two kids?
I have three kids. I have one daughter that I birthed, and then I have two stepdaughters.
And what? How old are they around?
Now they're 11, 11, and 14. But they're okay. Usually like 10. They're in different grades. So they're like 5th, 6th, and 8th grade.
Okay. Well, I'd love to talk, because let's jump back a little bit. When you say about your frugality and spending, what are some of your money values that kind of help set the framework for how you think about spending?
Huh. That is a good question. It's funny. I talk about money all the time. I don't necessarily think specifically of my money values or verbalizing them. As you say that, I was like, that would actually be a great podcast episode. So my money values, I have to like come up with ways to verbalize this better, but I would probably sum it up as two things combined. One is this concept of what a lot of people call like paying yourself first, which is kind of, you know, saving, having a certain savings rate or whatever it is, or, you know, swiping money out of your account before you're even able to spend it. But kind of doing the responsible things, taking care of the responsible things first and then having fun. But I would mix that with balance, right? So I'm not about deprivation. I really do believe, I love Jess from the Pioneers. If you ever listen to her, she's all about like enjoying the journey. And I've had moments in my life where I've gotten so focused on a financial goal that I got veered a little too far towards the deprivation and I don't enjoy it. And I don't even mean deprivation in like not allowing myself to enjoy things, but even just my money mindset around really obsessing about money and constantly thinking about, you know, just being overly concerned about spending money on every little thing. And so I really do try to take care of those two things of balance in the sense of I really believe in value-based intentional spending. I consider myself loose minimalist. You know, I'm less than the average person, but I'm not like a minimalist with like, you know, I only own 100 items, not that kind. But since I kind of went down that path, I buy a lot less stuff, right? I don't like a lot of physical stuff. I don't spend massive amounts of money on clothes. My co-host Mike always like makes fun of me and when we review budgets and because I spend more than he does, but I'm like, I spend less than 90% of women, probably 99% of women in the developed world on clothing. And so there's so many things I don't spend on, but then I will splurge on travel. I enjoy getting a new iPhone because I like technology and I like to take pictures and I like having a, you know, pretty modern MacBook. And, you know, so there's things I will spend money on, but I also don't buy, you know, we'll talk about kids soon, but like, I don't buy a lot of like superfluous stuff in my life. And I'm very thoughtful and minimal in the physical objects that I will spend money on.
So before we go into like the, you know, budgeting and kind of drilling down in some of the main categories of spending, how do you control it? Because I know for some people, it's really hard it's one thing to say that to be frugal, it's another thing to actually do it.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it is 99% my mindset. And I think that's the solution for almost everybody is getting your mindset and your perspective right. First off, I have a very Buddhist philosophy about how I think about spending. And I'd say like a mix of Buddhism and Stoicism. And if you, do you know, if I'll kind of explain.
Yeah, so please
I think more people are familiar with Buddhism and some of the principles of it. And I'll explain it a little bit, but Stoicism is the, I'll give you like a Google definition, right? The endurance of pain or hardship without the display of feelings and without complaint, right? Sort of this, like, a little bit of suffering is actually good. It's good for your soul. It makes you appreciate and have perspective about the world. And so, you know, when I think about what I need to be happy, it's my mindset is like, I don't need a lot to be happy. I'm very thankful for what I do have. And I'm incredibly thankful for all the the privilege I've had in life. And again, I had a very, very like middle-class upbringing. I did not have like luxuries when I was growing up. I had enough and plenty, but I, you know, never been out of the country until I was in grad school in like 25 or 26 and did not have like interesting travel. I mean, my kids have had so many interesting travels. Like I never had that. We couldn't afford that stuff when I was a kid. So I just say that for kind of, you know, the perspective of where I came from, but I think the idea of realizing you don't need a lot of things to be happy is 99% of the solution to controlling your spending. Because then, you know, there's all these tricks of like, oh, you know, don't let yourself buy something on Amazon right away, because it's so easy to kind of make these impulse purchases, leave it in your cart for a week. And then a week later, you probably realize you don't even want it. So there's all sorts of tricks like that to control your spending. And, you know, there's a lot of things I do with my kids and other things, but I really do believe that a huge piece of my success in that space of being able to control my spending is that I realized just the mindset and the realization that like money, the cliche term, right? Money doesn't buy happiness, right? A certain level of money buys happiness. And everyone knows, you know, the stats around that and, you know, how much money. There's a point at which, what is it, like $80,000?
Something like that, family, yeah.
Something like that. And that's about what my family spends a year. So it's interesting, a little bit more. But just that idea of, I think early on, I had the realization that I just an appreciation for what I did have and not constantly wanting and seeking more. I still have to check myself and I have to control, you know, my urges and other things. But I think my mindset and that perspective and being able to kind of continue to absorb information in the like Buddhism and Stoicism space and other like minimalist kind of influences in my life have propelled me and kind of or fueled me, I guess, on that journey and way of thinking. And one thing I'll say about Buddhism that's one of the things I always remember and frequently will use as an example of a Buddhist philosophy of appreciating what you have is, you know, you can go by, I live in a neighborhood that's a pretty old neighborhood in Atlanta. I live in one of the older homes, but they're constantly getting torn down and building these like what we call McMansions that cost, I mean, it used to be $1 million, but these days they're like $1.5 million or something.
Yeah.
And yeah. And that's not the house I live in, which is still a lovely house and I love it. And, you know, I'll be here for a very long time, but you can go buy a neighbor's house that's bigger than yours, that's fancier, that looks real opulent from the outside. And you can think, oh, I wish I had a house that nice. Or you can think, oh my gosh, I have a 5-bedroom, 3-bathroom house that's 3,200 square feet. It's got a beautiful backyard. It's on the best street in the neighborhood. You know, you can appreciate what you do have, or you can look at someone who has more than you and think, oh, I wish I had that. It's a little bit of like, just to oversimplify it, you know, a glass half empty versus glass half full approach to things. But I really do try to just manage my mindset around it, because I think that is, again, I say like half the battle, but I think it's like 90% of the battle with spending.
No, I love it. That's a great answer, because I find even still some of the people I talk to, they'll be like, Jen, I need some help getting out of debt. And like, we'll put together a plan. And then, you know, 6 months to a year later, they're back in debt.
Yeah.
And it's really hard. And I know a lot of it, like you said, is the mindset, the mentality. And it's so easy to spend money these days with credit cards and to get lost in the, especially once you have kids, to spend money on them and things.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a follow-up question though to that then is, how do you not spend so much money on your kids? Because I feel like that's one of the runaway budget items. And we'll kind of go through all them, but if you want to start there.
Yeah. So look, being in a blended family is even more complicated on this, just to be very transparent, because one, you're dealing with stepchildren. And so I don't, not just stepchildren, but my daughter too, they both go to other houses at different times. And so they have additional influences that aren't just their friends, but that are literally another parent and how they choose to spend money. And we don't all see eye to eye on how we spend money. We do at times, but we don't all the time. And so they've got varying levels of influences in their lives. And so that's like a whole nother layer of complexity. I'm not sure I've tackled it, but I will say one thing that a children's therapist told me really early on was kids are like really good at adapting from house to house. So an interesting thing for anyone who isn't a blended family or going through a divorce and worried about this stuff in the future, the one thing to remember is just that kids are adaptable. And really what you need to focus on is what you can control, which is what happens in your own house. And not like, don't stress out about the fact that someone else has different money values than you. And, you know, they might do things differently. Just focus on what you can teach your kids when they're in your care and hold strong to your values. And so on that note, our values with the kids and how we don't run away, spend with them. Because again, my kids are right now 11 to 14 and they're hitting, they've all, even my 11-year-old, they have all hit those years where they have a lot of peer pressure around them. We actually just did an episode a couple of weeks ago on peer pressure and the good kind of peer pressure versus like the bad kind of peer pressure. Because I'm now having to deal with my kids coming home and wanting things like Lululemon clothing. Super in, by the way, with kids.
And super expensive.
Super in, super expensive. And they're still growing. I can actually get, I love some of my Lululemon clothes. I can get behind it. If you're going to have the, I've had a pair of Lululemon tights that I love for like 10 years, right? Yeah. It's totally worth the money. When you're still growing, it's pretty tough to, you know, rationalize that spending. But they're coming home with those influences, you know, and they got good style. They want, you know, this pair of Nikes and Converse are really in right now. And like, you know, I appreciate their style. I want to support it. But, you know, I'd say our biggest things, and I'm not even like, I actually kind of want to like write this down to be more thoughtful about it because I'm just rattling this, you know, off my head. But we're big on moderation and just, you know, there are times we splurge. We took our kids to Europe this past summer for 6 weeks and we spent a lot of money and we splurged and they felt the splurging and they were like so surprised at a lot of things we did. And I was like, we're traveling. This is, you know. And we were celebrating our early retirement also. That was kind of our big milestone trip. But moderation. So they get some nice things. They get some splurgy things, but not all the time. We don't eat out a lot. Sometimes I find eating out with kids to be stressful anyways. So I don't even enjoy it personally. No one's ever really happy with what they got. And everyone's kind of picky. And so we don't eat out a lot. We eat at home a lot. We save a lot of money in that way. And then I think, you know, another thing that we're really, as the kids get, when my kids were younger, it was a lot easier because they didn't have these outside influences that really were that meaningful. Like the influences they had is, you know, they might see the Amazon Christmas catalog that shows up or something and want something out, you know what I mean? But they weren't like, their friends were not talking about, when you're in like kindergarten or first grade, they're not like talking about clothes or toys. They just don't care about that stuff. And so it's just recently in the last few years gotten to where we have to be much more intentional. We have really open financial conversations with our kids about money, right? And so I think moderation is a big thing, open conversations. We talk very openly to the point where when we do kind of splurge on something or like do something which our kids consider out of the norm, they actually like question it and are like, can we afford this? And I'm like, yes, we can afford it. But you know, like, thank you for asking. And they almost, I always used to joke that like, I want my kids to think that I'm poor. Like, I'm like a big believer in stealth wealth. And like, I don't want them to think, you know, they'll make comments about houses we drive by and be like, oh, look, especially when they were younger, like, oh, look at that fancy house. They must be so rich. And I'm like, hey, you don't know that they're rich. They might be in huge debt. They may not, you know, like you don't know. And so don't make judgments based on like what you see on the outside. And so we just talk very openly about money and how people spend their money and the idea of debt and that what people see on the outside isn't always reflective of actually how someone's doing financially. And then the other thing I'd say that we're really focused on right now is probably best summarized as independence, something that I learned from my parents at a young age and I highly value now. I don't remember if I have valued it when I was a kid or not. I'm not sure if I like fought it or was just like, oh, this is just the way it is. I got to get a job. But, you know, an example of like a trend in middle school is like every Friday they come home and all their friends want to go to this like local pizza place that they can all walk to. And I'm like, we don't even eat out as a family once a week, you know, like, so why, like, I'm not, when they want money to go do that, I'm like, cool, we started an allowance and you know, you can earn it. And not that I would never pay for something like that, but we don't now. We're kind of like, hey, you want to do stuff like that? You have to earn money. And I give them extra opportunities to earn extra money. So sometimes they'll get a little like stressed of like, oh, my allowance isn't enough or whatever. And I'm like, you don't even do what you're supposed to do for your allowance half the time, which is lately what we're like, you know, holding strong on. They're much more motivated to do their stuff now because they want to go out and do stuff with their friends because they can all walk to this Walgreens nearby and they go buy candy and stuff. And so when they start to want to do things that I wouldn't even go do, like, I think the candy at Walgreens is kind of overpriced. And so, sorry, Walgreens. But so the stuff that I wouldn't even go do. So I do hold strong to my values and I say no, but you can do it if you want to earn the money to go do it. And I'm teaching them some work ethic for people that aren't even old enough to, one of my kids is about to start some babysitting, but they're not otherwise old enough to have any sort of formal job, but they're old enough to learn work ethic and they're old enough to do stuff. And so they get extra chores. They have basic, their basic allowance is just for cleaning up after themselves, basically like keeping the room clean, just some very, very basic things. And we actually started what I heard, my husband heard this from someone. It's a dollar per age, which
yes,
boy, did my 10-year-old, when she just turned 11, had a lot to say about like, well, how come she earns more just because she's old? Like, she's a negotiator. She's going to be a strong businesswoman someday. She really wanted like a full understanding of why the rationale for that and that was not fair. And here's why, and blah, blah, blah. So, but we are doing the, you know, dollar per age per week. And it's making them be more thoughtful about how they spend their money. And it's making them work more. Like my 14-year-old, especially lately, is so focused and very careful with her money too, which I think is something we've taught her. And it's like really cool and heartwarming to see it. And she will come and I'll kind of like hear her like make a comment of like, oh, I got to spend my, like, it's like almost like every week I have to remind them they're spending their own money on something. But they will, I'll be like, hey, well, I have some extra chores you could do around the house if you want. And look, I pay well, I pay a good rate, you know, and I like to be, I don't mind them negotiating with me. I'm not like, you know, paying crazy amounts, but you know, I'm not, they're making like, you know, $20, $30 an hour sometimes if they really put it, you know, so, cause I'm giving them $5 for a job that takes them 20 minutes or something. And so it can add up fairly quickly. But I think that's a huge thing lately that I've seen that's just really successful is there's a clear expectation of when you want to go do something that is not a decision our family made to go do and something that we're initiating and funding, you got to earn your own money to do it. And it's really working. And I mean, they don't seem miserable. I mean, there's some complaining here and there, but at their age, there's complaining about all sorts of stuff. So it's no more about this than anything else that they might be vocal about.
I love that. And for those of you who haven't listened yet, you could check out episode 91, How to Teach Your Kids to Manage Money at Any Age with Dee from Kids Money Academy, because she actually talks about this in a lot of detail too, of how she does the age. She gives an amount and
it's a cool concept.
How successful it's been with her kids and the hands-on approach. It's like how to manage. And she started at young ages, at like 3 and 4, and the building blocks that is set up for then future conversations about money and instilling them really how to use their own money. If they want to use it for whatever, she's like, you can use it, whatever, no judgment from me, but you know, you have to spend on it. And yeah, so it's great to know it works.
And it's teaching them to save too. Like they'll get money for a birthday or a holiday from a family member or a grandparent. And that's when they can get some like bigger money, you know, they'll get like $50 sometimes. And they're like motivated to say like, oh, I got enough presents from other people. Like I'm going to throw that in the bank. And we actually have set up, they're sort of, I love Wealthfront, and Wealthfront lets you save up. Like now they have like a 3.8% interest rate, by the way, on savings. They're like the fastest to increase it theirs. And they also allow you to make these little like parent children accounts, basically, not literally, but you know, like a sub account within an account, but it's great literally for parents and children. And so you can move money and it's within your account, but it kind of shows up in the app as a separate one. And so we've done that for each of the kids. And so we'll show them, we let them do the little like swipe that they really like. Like when we pay their allowance, we pay it into that account. So it's sort of in their savings. We gave them cash for a little while and it like got lost. It got like crumbled up. I just feel like it got disrespected for what it was and literally lost and sort of forgotten about at times. And since we've moved just in the past few months to moving it into their Wealthfront account and they see that they're earning interest also, they move it in there. And then they're really incentivized when they get money from a relative to put it in there and then to just pull it out as they need it. And we set them up with Apple Cash, which they can do on their phones. And through the app, through the family setup, you can just move money. So we'll say like, okay, she'll say, hey, they're going to this pizza place. And I'm like, how much money do you want me to take out of your account and put into Apple Pay? Sorry, Apple Cash, which is different. It's related to Apple Pay, but it's specifically cash. And it's just making statements like that. So like when I even notice sometimes it's like, they're remembering it over again. They're like, oh yeah, you're not going to give me money. It's my money that I'm spending. You know, I think that's a really important it's a, you know, it's a small thing, but I think it's a really big thing for kids, and it's teaching them a lot about, you know, how to manage money early on.
No, I love it. I love it. It's funny because my daughter now wants to go out and spend. We haven't done the age thing yet. I'm waiting for my son to hit 3 to start in a couple months. And she's like, Mom, don't worry. I have so much money. She thinks she's a millionaire. She's not. Yeah. But it's so funny. She's like, Mom, you don't have to pay for that for me. I'm like, yeah, just remember this in another like 10 years when you're a teenager, yeah, and want to ask Mom and Dad for money for everything. Because we're going to.
Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah.
That's cute. Well, and they, but they learn stuff like that. So I mean, we'll be in a store and they'll ask for something, which, I mean, I remember like even younger, just like being like, not even wanting to take my kids to Target because I just didn't want the onslaught of, you know, 50 end caps and just things we don't need. And so I just didn't. By the way, that's a trick too. I just don't. I think we have an episode on that at some point. Like, I just don't take them places. Like, you know, if I can, I just like go to Target on my own, or I do, you know, I just don't put myself in situations that are going to create more desire and consumer wants and activities from my kids or myself. But when they're in those stores and they do want something, and I'm like, oh no, I'm sorry. And then sometimes they'll actually, I'll say sometimes like, you can spend your own money, or they'll say like, actually, I just want to spend my own money on it. And I'm like, and I'll sometimes, if depending on what the item is, I sometimes will heavily push, and sometimes I'll be like, yep, that's fine. That makes sense. I, you know, agree with that. And sometimes I will push back, but I won't say no. I'll just say, hey, I really like, think about it for a minute, and like, just let's wait till we leave the store or whatever. And I'll kind of give my opinion, but I'll let them make the decision. And I've had them have, I can't remember one of the things, but man, one of my kids really regretted buying something once. This was a couple years ago, and they were almost like crying over it. And I was like, don't get upset. Like, you know, like, it's not the end of the world, you know, like, cause I want them to learn that independence and that intentionality with their spending, but I don't want them to get like stressed about this stuff. Right. Yeah. Like that's why there's this big balance in terms of kind of when, even when you asked about money values. So that's sometimes kind of how we treat things.
Well, let's go dive into your budget a little bit. So let's start with how, so we started with the kids. Let's move into housing. Do you have any housing hacks, or how are you living? Like, how much are you spending? You talked a little bit that you're in Atlanta in a very high cost of living area. You're not like that. Have you made any splurges though in relation to your house?
Yeah. So, I mean, I live in a relatively high cost, you know, I live like in town in Atlanta, but I think, you know, my house cost, this was 15 years ago, cost, you know, $400,000 or something, which, I mean, now my house would cost $800,000. So, well, the biggest thing I've done is I've not constantly upgraded my house. I've had one house for about the first 5 years of owning a home. And I was like in my pretty early 20s then. And then I've had this house for the last 15 or so years. And I've, again, so many people that I know have upgraded their houses, moved to a bigger, fancier, newer house, moved to a different neighborhood, et cetera. And I, the one thing I did do is almost exactly 10 years ago, I did a really big remodel of the house I was in, the house I'm in now. And I had a little bit of a moment. I mean, I spent like $200,000 on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And again, that was on a $400,000-ish house, you know, but we fully gutted it. We like cut it, you know, tore out individual rooms, made a big open living space, raised the ceilings downstairs. When you're doing something of that size, you've got to do all new wire. It's an old house. It, you know, need all new wiring, all new plumbing. So it was expensive. But I had this moment before that where my dad had recently died. And I just had a little bit of like a life short moment of, you know, we lived in an old house. There were a lot of things that just weren't ideal about the usability of it. And we were just like, you know, life short. Let's do this now and enjoy our house for the next 10 years while we're raising kids. And this was actually with my ex-husband at the time. And let's enjoy this house again, you know, while we're raising kids and everything else, and not wait until we have every last cent saved up to do something like this, right? So I paid cash that I had saved up for half of it. I borrowed the other half from my mom and paid her back on a pretty expedited schedule. But that's the biggest money we've put into our house. And I actually had just finished that remodel about the time I got divorced. And I remember a couple years later when I met my now husband, I was kind of joking. I was like, I just like built the house of my dream. So I was like, I'm gonna need to meet someone who like wants to live in this house. This is like in the neighborhood I grew up in. Luckily, he was lovely and was very open to living in this house. But I just was like in love with the house, and I still am. I just love the area and have just a lot of nostalgia and like a lot of friends in this area and just a community I love. But I put that's probably the biggest thing. But I've certainly, there's been other investments. We built this like really cool whimsical treehouse in the backyard that we hired some people to build. That actually was my biggest money regret, probably, besides not investing when I was younger. The treehouse might be my second biggest money regret. We spent a lot of money on it. And our kids, I had this dream of what it would be. And our kids like just were over it pretty quickly. And mm-hmm. it gets like looked at like a tourist attraction every now and then when new friends are over. And it doesn't get used. Mm. Looks pretty in the backyard. Doesn't get used.
I know. I hate when that happens, when you try to do something nice for your kids and then it's gone. not to the same standard as building a treehouse, but we took the kids to Disney and I was so excited. I booked the... It was like a dinosaur restaurant and it was like in the rainforest and it would be cool, interactive. And it was a little bit expensive and my kids were terrified. And they didn't even want to eat in the place.
Instead, you've got like crying children.
Yeah, it was miserable, miserable experience. Aww, I was like, wow, this is what happens when you try to do something nice.
Well, for every time it backfires, I'm sure there's also times that it's like someday, you know, it'll be the best experience they ever had.
It was funny. We went to DC recently and we stayed at this really dingy Holiday Inn and the kids loved it. That was their favorite part of the trip. Like they didn't even want to, we were at the Washington Monument and they're like, can we go back to the hotel room? And I'm no, it's a 4x4. There's no room to move. There's no lobby even. Like, what are we going to do in the hotel? They're like, we just want to go to the hotel. I'm like, all right, you know, this was the best investment I made, was going to spending all the hours driving to go see a hotel room. That wasn't even nice then. But
that's funny.
Anyway, but going back to what you were saying with your house, I have actually had some moms ask me to decide, should we spend money on a remodel? Should we not spend money and just save more? Were you already having a high savings rate that you felt comfortable making that money decision?
Well, honestly, not really at the time. I mean, I had no fire dreams at that point in my life. I didn't know what it was. I was frugal-ish, but I also splurged a lot at that point in my life. Like I didn't have a financial end goal. I was frugal just because that's kind of what I knew. But again, I just didn't have, I like kind of hoarded cash. I literally had $100,000 in cash lying around I don't mean like cash, but not in investments, you know, like in a bank account. And yeah, so I had no fire dreams then, or even awareness then. And so, you know, it's hard to say like the decision I would have made. Looking back, I have no regrets about that decision, but I had a decent savings rate up until then because I had saved up, you know, half that amount. But I spent it all overnight, right? And so sort of kind of restarted saving from that point on. And then also was like going through a divorce and other things that, you know, are somewhat costly. Yes. In terms of all of a sudden I'm paying that mortgage. We had just recently moved to a 15-year mortgage, which I was super like proud of. And then I was like, whoa, I might not have done that had I known I was about to get divorced. But it was one of those things. It was like a blessing in disguise because it sort of forced me to have a really high savings rate. So I paid off my mortgage when I was like 36 or 37.
Wow.
And one of the ways I was able to do that is because I was kind of like locked into this 15-year. I mean, I could have refinanced, but it was one of those kind of forced ways to pay myself first and to put, I mean, again, a lot of debates on like, is it the, you know, most savvy financial thing to do to pay off your mortgage? For me, I loved it because it gave me a peace of mind of just having a really much lower cost of living and never having to worry about my housing and just really lowering our expenses. But I don't know, that is a tough decision. It's such a personal decision for the stage you're at in your life and for just what you know you, like I knew the trajectory I was on career-wise. And so I was confident that I would be able to re-save up and pay off my mom quickly and other things like that. And so I had the discipline to do that and I knew it. But so I think it's up to people knowing themselves and knowing, you know, what it's like, you know, I always say about personal finance, it's called personal finance for a reason. It's different for every single person. And so it's so hard to say when people are asking for advice like that. But I am a big proponent of don't do things you can't afford.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. That was not a risky decision for me because, again, I knew my job security was high. I also knew I had a strong backup net if something were to go wrong, like just that someone like, I mean, I just had my mom and my brother, like someone would catch me, right? I wouldn't fall all the way to the bottom. I would just fall a little bit and then have to like pay some people back over time. And so I think a lot of it is like, what are the, you know, what's the safety net you have around you to, or the support, the financial support system you have around you if you do run into trouble. But I, again, I tend to be pretty conservative. Like I don't like spending money I don't have. I'm really not a fan of debt. I wouldn't have done that on like a really high, I wouldn't have taken out like a really high home equity line of credit.
Yeah.
Personally.
So let's pivot now a little bit into cars. What kind of car do you drive that you use to? Ooh.
This is a touchy subject right now. Well, let me give you the background first, okay? For most of our lives, my husband and I, we drove Priuses. And we love that. We both drove a Prius. Actually, when I first met him, we met online. And one of the first things I said to him, half joking, but half serious, was, what kind of car do you drive? I think this was like over chat or email even. And I said, what kind of car do you drive? I think you can tell a lot about a person from the car they drive. And he said a Prius. And I was like, I drive a Prius. Like, that's perfect. And I'm the kind of person who would, at that point in our lives, I would judge if someone was like, oh, I drive a Mercedes. And I'd be like, how much debt are you? You know, I would rather, I'm more attracted to someone who drives a Prius that's paid off and is responsible with their money than someone who's like all flashy and something they own. Like, yeah, 100 times more attractive for you to have a debt-free car that's responsible and reliable. So we used to have Priuses. And I always joke when I talk about like fear and money a lot, I have like this thing called bag lady syndrome. Like, I'm always afraid, no matter how well I do financially, that like someday the carpet's going to be pulled out from under me and I'm going to like lose it all. And the term comes from an actual person who did lose it all overnight. She wrote a book called The Bag Lady Papers. She lost all her money in the Bernie Madoff scheme, had been very successful up until then. So I always have this thing, and I always joke that this is coming to answer your what kind of cars we drive. I always have this joke that I have made this. It's like only a half joke, but people always laugh when I say it. But like when I planned for early retirement, I kind of had all these forecasts of all these emergencies that could happen. So I knew how much money we needed, but I also was like, well, what if college is way more than I'm expecting it to be? What if I get sick? What if I have to take care of one of our parents has some expensive medical things that we don't realize we have to pay for or something? So I had I can't remember some of my other what ifs, but one of them was a Tesla. I literally would, and people were, and I was always like, what if I have to buy a Tesla? What if, you know, like, cause I've always wanted, I'm very like environmentally conscious and I have always wanted an EV and particularly that EV. So during the pandemic, we both had our Priuses. We have 3 kids. They take up a lot of space and they're just like right up. We always have these like small cars and we finally decided to bite the bullet and get a third row seat. This is all going to come back around in a minute. So during the pandemic, we bought a Subaru Ascent, 1 year used one. Love it. It's got we bought it for the third row and I love it. Now we can take our kid. We all the time, especially being retired, like I want to be the parent that can like drive people places. I want to help other parents of friends of ours that are busy and stressed at work and don't have time to drive the kids places. It's one of my many goals in early retirement is like to be helpful to the people around me and my community, including my close friends.
That's awesome.
And other stressed out parents. Like I really do want to help. So anyways, we can't help when we only have a car that only fits our 3 kids and us, and we can't fit anybody else. I can never drive and like pick up somebody. So we got a third row car. I love it. A week ago, we bought a Tesla.
Nice.
It's not even worth getting into the story, but it's just funny that you asked that because I haven't even talked about it on our podcast yet because I'm a little like self-conscious about it, honestly.
Why? Like because you spend too much money type thing?
This is my view. Like when you ask about like money values, my thing is don't buy things you can't afford and be reasonable, right? But at the same time, I'm also like, enjoy your life, right? We both really wanted one. We were able to do it in a pretty like financially responsible way. I mean, that we're in the process of selling our Prius right now. But we can afford it. We can afford to just pay for it. It's not going to negatively influence any of our financial goals in our life right now. And that's an example. Actually, I didn't want to use this example, but since you asked about cars, I'll confess that we did just buy a Tesla. When my husband, Greg, drove it home, we hadn't told the kids about it. It happened a little quickly, some might say impulsively. And he pulled into the driveway and I like told the kids to come outside. And our oldest kid was really concerned. She was like, wait a minute, how can we afford this? And I was like, oh, like... We can afford it. Like, but that's nice that they're, I felt bad because at first she was kind of stressed about it and was like just worried. And I was like, I don't want you to worry. I want you to know like we're making responsible decisions and we wouldn't do something that we couldn't afford to do. And but anyways, that was a very long-winded answer to the
question. No, but it's so good because I'm a full believer. Like I love Ramit Sethi of I Will Teach You to Be Rich, of enjoy, spend money where you can spend and don't spend where you don't. And I'm also a big believer of enjoy the journey too, because we've had a lot of life happen to us and, you know, you only get one shot around. So for you to get a Tesla, like you thought about it, it was, you said impulse, but you already been driving.
It was like our sort of impulse.
Yeah. No. But still not a normal like impulse. It's not like you just decided one day I'm sure you looked at your finances. I'm sure you ran numbers. Yes. You paid for it in full. You didn't get a high interest rate. Yep. You weren't taking a loan. All the quote unquote right things, you did them. So now it's the mindset of, you said you felt weird driving, but you should be proud of good about it. Like enjoy it.
Well, I'm a big fan of stealth wealth. So I actually don't like riding it. I was like dropping one of my kids off at school the other day. And I was like, I just don't like, I feel like teachers were looking at me. I just feel like, I don't want to be, I'm not a showy person. Right. Like but I love this car. Like it drives amazing. I've never been a car person. Like it's like a pleasure to drive. I can't describe it. And anyways, I wish it was like the experience of a Tesla, but like on the outside, it was like a Honda Civic. You know, like I don't need it to look like a Tesla to everybody else, if that makes sense. I would I prefer to have the body of my Prius and everything that people believe about me with my Prius, but with the functionality of a Tesla inside and the EV. Yeah.
Where we live, everyone around us has Teslas and we do not. And my daughter really wants one. But we have like so many other priorities. The car is the last thing on our plate. But again, it's like that thoughtfulness of like, okay, these are the things that we really value. This is where we're going to put our money. As great as a Tesla will be, that's a future, you know, God willing, you know, we'll get to it. But we don't really need it right now. It's not, I mean, I kind of do as a real estate agent. It would be nice to not have to spend so much money on gas, but it's just all your mindset. And as long as you do, like you said, the responsible thing, you had the money, you balanced it, you paid for it, you're fine.
Yeah. Well, and I told my husband too, when we were like discussing it too, or I think right after we were having like the normal just feelings of like, ooh, we just did a big thing. And I was like, look, if this is the worst financial decision we've ever made, like we're doing okay.
Yes. You
know? Cause like we've been really overly responsible in so many ways. I mean, the most irresponsible thing we ever did was quit our job 6 months ago, quit our reliable high paying jobs. But I'm like your comment just earlier about just perspective, and I don't remember the words you were using, but just like, we want to spend time with our kids. We did this to enjoy our lives while we're young and able to physically and mentally, and not wait until we're of retirement age. And I'd rather work later. I'd rather work 20 years from now when my kids are out of the house, if I need to, than now when just these moments are fleeting. And with teenagers, I always see them like by the second, you know, losing interest and a desire to hang out with us and a desire, you know, they're growing up so quickly, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy to think. I think it was on the Choose a Five podcast. I heard them say that, you know, you only have 18 years with your kids, which is like a third, not like a third of their life, not even like, and then they're gone and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's so
scary.
And
then we're a blended family and our kids are gone every other weekend. So that's a whole nother, you know, like less time. And so I just want to enjoy this time now with them. And back to like the car thing, and it ties back to like the idea of kind of stoicism and Buddhism. Like I know from experience and just from knowing myself, I know I don't need a Tesla to be happy, right? I was very happy with my Prius. I'm actually really like struggling to let it go, right? I'm having trouble selling it. I'm like not negotiating with people because I just don't want to sell it. And I'm having to like work through that. But I think there's so much in like knowing that you don't need something to be happy doesn't mean you can't still enjoy something when you can afford it, right? But I know I know for 1,000,000%, if that Tesla was stripped away from me tomorrow, or I had some crazy thing where someone was like, you know, you need to hand us that Tesla or something's going to happen to your child, I'd be like, take the damn Tesla. Like, I don't need, you know, I don't need it. It's not important to me. And so I think, I don't even know what to call it, but like just being able to kind of have the perspective to know, like, I don't need these things to be happy doesn't mean I can't enjoy them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like that's a great mindset to have.
But I'm still struggling with that a little bit because I do like, I have these like guilty feelings. I don't know if guilt's not the right word, but I just have these feelings of like not wanting to
like a show
have nice things. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think it's from a place of not deserving it or a place of.
You sound like a therapist. Yes. It probably is.
It was like the first thing that came to my head when you said it. Like, why?
Who knows where. I think it comes from like not deserving it, but I could tell you a big piece of it. And it, I mean, who knows, like, deep down, but like, I think a big piece of it is who I want to be and kind of who I respect. And like, I don't like showy things, you know, I just don't, I know I don't need that stuff to be happy. So I don't ever, you know what it might be is the image I want to put out into the world.
Okay.
That's a big piece of it. I know that stuff isn't required to be happy. And so I don't want to send them. I don't like putting out it. It's funny. We just did an episode on peer pressure and it's called something else, but I almost called it the good kind of peer pressure. Like I want to put more of the good kind of peer pressure out in the world. I don't want other people to like see my Tesla and be like, feel bad that they don't have a Tesla. If that makes sense.
Yeah. You don't want to be the Instagram mom and you want to be authentic to yourself.
Well, and I want people to understand that they don't need this stuff to be happy, right? Yeah. I don't want to keep putting more of that out in the world. And so it's this battle with like consumerism. I really believe in EVs and Tesla's got the best EV out on the market, I believe. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't believe in ostentatious wealth and conspicuous consumption.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Well, I'd love to pivot a little bit now because you answered that very well. Thank you so much. But another major budget item is food. Do you have any things you do in that realm, things you value, and then things that you don't spend money on?
Yeah, well, I'm in love with Aldi. Are you an Aldi shopper?
We actually don't really have one near us where we live.
Oh, that's really sad. It's like a food. It's like a different kind of food desert, you know? It's like an Aldi food desert.
I've heard like it mentioned on a bunch of podcasts. I've never been in an Aldi, so I don't know. Like,
okay, it's like I'm obsessed with Aldi's, but like it's a European company. And so when we were in Europe this summer and we landed in Germany, like the first, like we're like walking through the train station and there's an Aldi, and I'm like, oh my God. We like, it was just amazing. We went to like every Aldi in every country. It's a discount grocery store, but it's like, we've got a whole episode on Aldi. I can't remember which one it was, but here's what I love about Aldi. Amazing prices. Mm. Rich and Regular just did a whole post about their love of Aldi. And he's like a chef. Like, I think he like kind of knocked Aldi a long time ago and then came back around. He's a former classically trained chef. He is a minimalist grocery store. It's smaller. They don't have 20. You go to Kroger or Publix, there are 30 types of oatmeal. It's overwhelming.
Even have those near us either.
You live in like a really small town.
No, we're in the Northeast. They're just not around.
What's your like local grocery store?
We have like ShopRite, Trader Joe's, Costco. Yeah.
Well, Trader Joe's and Aldi, little known fact. Well, not that little known, but they were formed. They're owned by the same brothers. They like split off and one of them I don't know the full story. We went into it in some episode. I can't remember now, but they're related.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So Aldi's like a little baby Trader Joe's in a way. Fascinating products. They've got a ton of their own store brand stuff. Very high quality for what you get. Prices you cannot beat, especially with like inflation. Like Aldi's prices are going up too, but they're still lower than everybody else's. So again, long-winded. We shop at Aldi. I love it for a number of reasons. If you want to know why, we talk about Aldi in like multiple different episodes. We're vegan, so we don't spend money on meat, which I think just from what I hear, it's been like 7 or 8 years since I've eaten meat. What I hear like is expensive and adds, fake meats, which we sometimes buy are also expensive and certain vegan products are also expensive. But we just, you know, we eat what we have. We really don't have a lot of food waste. And I think food waste is like a huge piece of a lot of people's expenses. I am obsessed or OCD about like food waste. Like I'm just like, my kids sometimes like act like they won't eat leftovers. And I'm like, that is not how the world works. We eat leftovers. You have to get to the next food. Like, sometimes I'm like, you have to eat these things before you can eat these things because these things are going to go bad first. And like, I'm just very big on like not wasting food, which I think really can save a lot. Mm. But we don't really like keep a close eye. We don't really budget. We track our expenses religiously, but we don't budget. And we sometimes have a forecast of what we think we'll spend. So we spend on groceries and this is a, you know, family of five, we used to spend like $500 to $600 pre-inflation. We spend, you know, in October, we spent $750 on groceries. Do you think that's high or low?
Well, for a family of five, no. I mean, we're probably at like 1,000 at four. Okay. So,
and you know, our kids are gone every other weekend. That doesn't include eating out. That's a different. Oh wait, actually, sorry. That includes eating out. I do think we are spending like $600 to $700 on groceries, because like September was $910, and that was groceries and eating out, and it includes alcohol also. We don't drink a massive amount, but we do drink. So we're I don't even know how to describe it. Like we eat pretty basic stuff too. So we're not like eating rice and beans every night, but we do eat rice and beans sometimes. And we just are like conscious about what we will buy. I mean, half the time I don't even take my kids with me grocery shopping because it's just easier without them. And I can, especially being early retired now, I can do stuff like that easier during the day. But when I do, they'll run up and bring me something that they want. And I'm like, oh, cool. How much is that? And they're like, I don't know. I'm like, we're not discussing this till I have a price. And then it's, you know, because there's some things that they'll pick out. And I'm like, hey, look at these cookies versus those cookies. So those are the little moments where like I teach them to look at prices and to like consider, would you rather have this pack of cookies that's $6 or this pack that's $1.50 and you get just as many cookies. Yeah. And it's the Aldi brand versus it's actual Oreos or something. And then they're like, oh, I don't care. I'll take the $1.50.
That's great.
So yeah, we're pretty reasonable. We're not like, we don't try that hard to keep our food budget down, but we just, I don't think, eat super expensive stuff.
And what about, I know another big budget item is kids' activities. Do you spend a lot in that area, or are you able to save?
We didn't used to. But our kids just got into some club sports, and we just did an episode. Every time I like learn something new financially, usually there's like an episode on it. We just did an episode on like, why are kids sports so expensive? So two of our kids just started a club volleyball team, and it's over $2,000 per kid.
Oh, wow. And for how long? That was a year or like a month?
It's about five to six month season. It's kind of drawn out. It's like half a year. But that was really expensive. I mean, previously it's like my daughter plays in a basketball league and it's like $350 for the, you know, season. And so I was just not used to dropping like a couple $1,000s per kid. We had like major sticker shock, but we also had to check in with ourselves about our values and priorities. And I love playing sports as a kid. And I think sports teach so much to kids. And so
yeah,
I'm not saying I'm going to like break. I don't think anyone's going to like be playing volleyball professionally in our family, but they're really loving it and they're enjoying it. We're having fun as a family playing, and like they're taking it seriously. And so I want to support that, you know, and within reason. So if they ask to join three different club teams, it might be like, hey, you need to pick one, you know, or pick two of these activities. But we don't spend massive amount on activities. And outside of that, we do pretty inexpensive things. Like we love to travel with our kids. So we will like splurge when we're traveling. But when we're just at home, we go for a hike. We may take them out for like ice cream or some treats, but we just don't spend like crazy money out on activities as a family.
That's great. I love that too, because we've been really into, we want the kids to have like healthy lifestyle, healthy habits, but our town offers, at least at the younger ages, our daughter's doing jazz and it was like $300 for the year. And they do like, they have like little club sports that our son's going to do. And it's also like $300 for a year. So yeah, I have no problem spending that. Yeah. It's super cheap and it gets them out and they get to do something and it's a win-win, I think.
And they learn so much from it. Aside from like whether they're going to play that sport seriously longer term, they learn so many skills around teamwork and just a ton of different things that I think are honestly like priceless. You can't teach them at home. You can't put together a team, you know, at your house and like give them the same experience of like working with a coach. And so I think it's really important.
Well, I'd love to ask you, before we enter our fire round, we kind of talked about the major budget items, but is there any like frugal hacks that you have for people? I know you said you don't spend money on clothing, how you kind of save on food. You haven't really upgraded too much on your house, and like you drove the same car for many years before you finally splurged. But is there any other things you could think of that you could share?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm like super frugal and like weird about certain things. Like I like cut the ends off my toothpaste and get like another 3 or 4 weeks out of them. And like, I just, you know, like I will like use a hacksaw to open a thing of shampoo to get like more shampoo out of the I'll just do crazy things. Part of that's an environmental thing of like, I don't want to waste more plastic and more of this product and all these other things. But part of it also is like, there's like, you know, 10% of that product left in there that I paid for that I would like to get access to. And so I'm more kind of like frugal and like really quirky ways like that. And again, just sort of a minimalistic way of like, I don't walk into stores. I don't walk into like a TJ Maxx and just browse and like buy new home decor items. Like I don't, I bought a Christmas pillow actually that they were selling at Aldi that was like really cute with a gnome on it. I've never owned a Christmas pillow before in my life. My kids like love Christmas decor. So I was like, I can own one Christmas pillow. And I don't have, I just don't, I buy the things I need. And when I really want something and value it, I buy it, but I don't shop. I would never just like walk through the mall, or I would never just like go to a store to like peruse.
Yeah.
When I go to Target, I'm like on a mission and I do not like make eye contact with things around me.
Which is what you have to do when you're shopping if you want to stay frugal.
Yeah. And it's not even just frugal. I mean, that's a big piece of it, but it's like, it's overwhelming. Yeah. I find just like walking into stores now, I'm just like, there's so much crap everywhere and I don't want it. And I don't want it in my house. And like it's like the more stressed I was, especially when I was working a lot, I just stuff added more stress to my life.
Yeah.
And in no way like helped me. And I just always wanted, I've just always like, I've been on this kick for like the last 10 plus years of like, I just want less and less stuff, more high quality stuff and just less superfluous stuff in my life.
Yeah. Like I would rather now to have like a really good pair of shoes that I could use for like 3 years, 4 years, or within reason, and then buying one every like couple months because the heel broke or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, like I'm not a big fan of fast fashion, and like I the same thing, I'd rather invest in like higher quality stuff and just not have to replace it as often.
Plus it's hard to find a good pair of comfortable shoes. Yeah. So I'm like, when I find it, I want to keep it for as long as I can.
Yeah.
So, well, Maggie, this has been amazing. At this point in the show, I'd love to enter our lightning round. This is where I ask my guests the same questions each week. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Well, question number one is, what is one fun fact about you that not many people know?
Okay. Fun fact about me. I have a drone and I like love flying it. And when I was on my trip this summer, I flew it in many places that were illegal to fly it. Cause I'm like, I'm pretty much a rule follower, but in things like that, where I'm like I flew it through the Arc de Triomphe. I flew it through these canals. Like I just like, I kind of like flying it through. It's like a low risk thing. Like worst case, like I'm going to lose my drone. But I just like love flying it really cool places and getting like really cool shots with it.
So your pictures must be amazing.
Yeah.
So that's a word.
I haven't had time to actually do anything with the photos yet, but yes, they're super cool.
Awesome. Well, question number two is, who inspires you the most and why?
Wow. I mean, I think I would say, I'm going to just say like Buddhism, but if I had to pick a person, I'd say the Dalai Lama because of his Buddhist beliefs. I just think everything about Buddhism I want to be and can relate to. And it just, there's just nothing that I, or not nothing. It's more on the flip side. It's everything I want to be more of in terms of just compassion and goodness and who I want to be in this world.
That's great.
I've read all of his books, which are usually written with somebody else. The Art of Happiness is one of my favorite books, but I'm also not one of those, like, I don't need to meet him. I'm not sure I would get.
Yeah.
Like, and being in a crowd of thousands of people where I'm like, not actually gonna, I mean, now look, if I could go have like a real conversation with him, you know, that'd be different. But I feel like I have had a conversation with him because I've read all of his books and I'm, you know, listened to his thoughts on life. And yeah. So again, Art of Happiness though, my favorite book, which was that kind of like interviews and discussions with him.
That leads to my next question is, what books are you reading now or have read and love and would recommend?
Okay. Well, The Art of Happiness is my favorite book of all time. I used to like gift it to everybody. Other like top in terms of reading now, I just like today finished Lucy by the Sea, which is a great book. I might have cried. It's like made me think of my mom a lot. But like all time, like another book that just has like influenced me a lot is Lynchpin by Seth Godin. I used to lead pretty big teams at work, and I just, from like a leadership standpoint and coaching and mentoring, like it to me is the mentality of like how you need to design yourself to be successful at work, like becoming a linchpin and how you should like not worry about other people and worry about yourself. Just all the, Seth Godin has this whole linchpin manifesto that I love, which just summarizes like the points he's trying to make in that book. But I would say those are probably like The Art of Happiness and Linchpin are two of my like top two all-time favorite books.
Amazing. I'll put links to them in the show notes. Well, the final question is, what is one actionable tip or piece of advice that you can tell our moms out there to help them on their own financial independence journey?
I think, you know, I'd say like it's a balance of kind of perspective and like appreciate what you have so that you're not always desiring more, but also balance of like, don't be so hard on yourself. You know, like it's tough being a mom. It's especially like, I actually feel like I'm in a different days because teenagers are like a different level of toughness, but my kids are much more independent now. And I remember when they weren't. And I remember when I was working a demanding full-time job and trying to raise kids and just all these things. And it's just tough. So sometimes just don't be so hard on yourself and don't judge every little thing you do and kind of balance being kind to yourself with also, you know, creating some discipline and setting some goals and like planning for the future. But depending on what phase you're at in your life and kind of, you know, what you're doing, I'm not always, you know, preaching like deprivation, and I'm a believer in discipline. And like, I believe if you can get your mindset right and appreciate what you have, it'll be a lot easier to be disciplined about things. But there's days when like a mom just needs to like go get a foot massage and go to Starbucks, and like, that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we're so hard on ourselves.
Whatever you're feeling like you need that day, you know?
As long as you're within budget and you thought about it, it's not an impulse and it's not like you do it all the time, then yeah, go for it. Why not? But also, if you have the money, then enjoy it too, you know? And yeah, totally. I say that knowing that I have to work on that because it's very hard to let go. Like, it's very hard to let go of money.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it's even harder to let go of money when the paychecks stop coming in.
Yes.
I mean, I went through some like funky emotions when I stopped receiving money coming in. Even though I have money saved, obviously that's how we are retiring, but to shift to the money stops coming in and all of a sudden you need money still going out, it's like a really weird, it just like messes with your mind for a while. You got to like get right with it and used to it. It's just a different approach.
Yeah, I feel that too, even as a real estate agent, because I don't make checks all the time and it's just weird. I mean, we have the money, but
it fluctuates, right?
Yeah, but it's weird to know that. Like, I don't really, we're at a point, fortunately, where I do need to work, but not like, I don't need to have a full-time job. I don't need to have consistent money coming in. Like, we worked really hard, so I wouldn't have to do that. But it's a mindset shift to be, oh my goodness. Yeah. Like, the credit card bill is still coming in, but there's no paycheck coming.
My bank account used to constantly increase. And like, lately I'm like, oh, I might need to like move some money so I don't like overdraft myself.
Yeah.
I'm just not used to, I have to like adjust my ways.
Yeah.
Just how I manage money.
Well, Maggie, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for just being so open and transparent on your money habits and your thought process. How can my listeners connect with you further?
I am most active on Instagram at friends.onfire. And they can always email us. You can always email me at maggie@friendsonfire.org, or you can go to our website to get in touch with myself or our co-host. And that's at friendsonfire.org.
Amazing. I'll put links to all your content and stuff in the show notes. So Maggie, thank you so much again.
Yeah, thank you so much. Just really enjoyed chatting with you.
All righty. That wraps up another amazing episode of the Investor Mama podcast. I hope you enjoyed today's episode along with my other content. And if you did enjoy it, please subscribe on the platform that you're listening to and leave a rating or written review. It really lets providers know you're finding value with my content. Also, feel free to share on social media or with any friends or family who you think would benefit from this episode. That would be amazing. I would greatly appreciate it. Help spread the word of the Investor Mama podcast. So thank you in advance for that. And this is Investor Mama. I will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Investor Mama podcast. If you like today's episode, please support us by clicking subscribe on the platform you are currently listening to, leaving a comment or awesome review, and spreading the wealth and sharing this podcast with friends and family or on social media. Don't forget to check out investormama.com to connect with our community and sign up for our email. Stay tuned for next week's episode.